so to review quick on the quick side here, I'm going to state what the disorder wants and see if you can remember then how to do the opposite. So anxiety wants to avoid or to shrink back. So then what would the opposite be?
Face it
head on, confront, right? Stand your ground to the emotions, to the bullying thoughts, to the reality altering distortions, all those things. Anxiety wants to fix, so to do the opposite, we need to learn to
let
go and not fix. Very good. We need to learn to let go and not fix. Dropping things is a fundamental skill for tackling anxiety. And we're going to be hitting on anxiety here tonight especially. And then when we wrap up the anxiety things, God willing, our final class in a week and a half will be in whatever time we have left to talk a little bit more about depression. Okay. Depression wants to weigh us down. So to do the opposite of that, we need to
keep doing things that help move us forward.
Yes. Keep doing things, the things that help us move forward. Very good. Very good. Was that? Oh, you were. Photographic memory over here. So, okay. In many of our disorders, the word stuck is a good description, and so I feel stuck. So, what are the things we can do to move forward that are going to help, right? Classic example, you ever felt a project that is just too big, and you think about it, it makes you depressed. You're not working on it, so it makes you depressed. You haven't started it yet, and that makes you depressed. Well, how can I work on it for 10 minutes and just chisel away a little bit, and then the next day work on it just for 10 minutes? That will make the project shrink. You know what I mean? It won't seem like such a boogeyman, that kind of thing. So instead of letting it weigh you down, what are some things you can do, even physically moving, to that will help you in the long run? Okay, depression wants to hold on. And so to do the opposite of that, we want to let go. But specifically, that doesn't mean, well, those hard things, those awful things in your life, just let it go, forget about it. No, we let go because how are we able to in a good way let that go? We put it on God. We let God meet us there. We let God comfort us there. And then once He's met us there and comforted us there, then we can then let it go in a way that is a good resolution to it. We let God meet us in our depression, in our difficulties, our baggage, everything, right? God and His people want to meet you there and then to help move you out of it when that time is appropriate. Addiction. What does addiction... I forgot the exercise. Addiction wants us to give in. So to do the opposite, we need to... resist, not give in, right? That's pretty obvious, right? It wants you to take heroin. You say, I should not take heroin. Okay. Fundamentally, the addiction wants you to focus on it, move towards it, and do it, and pull the trigger, right? That's what the addiction wants. So to grow out of it, we need to obey God, not the cravings, form new associations, right? Not do it, take the hard road, choose a different path, but that will get easier over time. We have the stuck ruts in our brain, so we need to choose differently and strengthen a new path. Okay, the addiction wants you to focus on the drug. Instead, we need to... Yeah, you guys know this, right? So you focus on other things. Okay, so fundamentally wants you to focus on it, move towards it, and do it. So we need to focus on other things. We need to not move towards it and not do it. Interrupt the pattern, I think, is really helpful terminology. When the guy did his presentation at 25th Street like 4 or 5 years ago.
Art Adams.
We did this thing at 25th Street. Art Adams' biggest background is addiction. He does AA meetings. That's what he talks about. He had this pattern of going back to the alcohol or whatever it is. Interrupt that pattern, right? So that idea of interrupting the pattern. Okay, anger. Anger wants to, I got to do something. And so to do the opposite, I be still. That's good. I like that terminology. That's good and biblical, even. Be still and know that I'm God. Okay. You want to do something, so you need to not do something, but a way to frame that is you need to learn to tolerate that emotion, tolerate that feeling and not act out. It's hard to be angry and not do something, not act out. But we learn to tolerate that and have self-control, to feel it, to be angry and not sin. And that, of course, those are some muscles, some emotional muscles to grow, to be angry, tolerate that, but not act out. Then anger sees myself as the victim. Rage really has a kind of victimhood piece to it. So how do we do the opposite of that? Yeah, absolutely. And really, that's what the...
He didn't act like a victim.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He didn't see himself in that victim mindset. I have your 1 Peter 2 and 3. What's at the end of 1 Peter 2? Our Lord suffered unjustly, walking his footsteps when you have to suffer unjustly. That idea, right? So I need to be filled with Christ. Can I see, be Christ-like, focus on Christ, be filled with Christ, change the story I'm telling about the situation? If the story I'm telling is, woe is me, I'm the victim, then work on that. Like God help that. And do we see these things in ourselves? Do I see bitterness, revenge, victimhood, lists of wrongdoing, right? All that. Okay. And then, yes, Jen.
Sorry. I just kind of thought about that in the context of motherhood. And I feel like there's almost kind of a movement of, I don't know, of thinking about, like, oh, my kids make such messes. Like, and maybe some of it's in joking, and but I think there's a lot of, at least online, a lot of that kind of victimhood mindset of motherhood and like how I have to do everything. But I think it's probably helpful if we like unfollow those people who discourage us in the calling that we have.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Yeah. So that story is my kids are a burden. I'm the only one doing this. I'm unappreciated. How can I change the story to see how God sees it? How does God see this? That's really the goal in a lot of this. How can I see it as God sees it? Yeah, Elise.
I don't know if it's exactly as the opposite as you're mentioning there, but in Exodus 4, when God was angry on Moses, because Moses was like, whenever he said, hey, please send somebody else.
Yep.
He did the opposite. Of maybe what he was saying, he was already telling him, hey, I'm with you, you have what you need. But he did something else. He ended up giving him Aaron. He's like, hey, take Aaron with you. So that's an example of kind of like doing the opposite.
Interesting, yeah. Almost like when our kids complain, we want to be like, well, fine, you won't get any whatever, but instead to be gracious, kind of like that. Yeah, Heather?
I just wanted to underscore that the idea of changing the story doesn't mean that we come up with a fictional Pritiker story.
Correct.
But that we're honest, fully honest about it. So it may be that my situation is honestly very bad.
Awful, yeah.
And I can say, well, it's honestly very bad, and this is also true, that God can use this, that some good can come of it,
yep.
That I'm being refined. Both of those things can be true, and sometimes I feel like we pressure ourselves or others that we'll just think about it a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
As though that's sometimes it diminishes how big God can be.
Absolutely.
Now our problems become so small. As
yes. Yeah. Do we see the psalmist doing that, minimizing? I'm just going to put myself in an alternate universe that denies the problem. No, they address the problems. They speak of the problems, right? So, yeah, changing the story in a 1 Peter 2, 3 kind of way, those chapters put our unjust suffering in the context of the ultimate unjust suffering. It doesn't say, oh, your master's fine. It says, no, you're going to have unfair, miserable masters, but look to Jesus. Yeah, so that's a great point. Okay, shame. Shame wants you to hide, and so to do the opposite of that, we need to...
Own it.
Open up, connect, good. I like connect. Open up with people who can help us. Connect, I think, is a really good word there. The way out of shame is through it. So good relationships, addressing it with others. Shame is so connected how others view and treat us. Discouraging conversations, we hit on this before. feed the shame more. In a very real sense, we need others to get the shame in a place of healing. Now, we can die and still have that shame. We can, you know, keep a steady job with that shame maybe, but we may be carrying a lot of that. To heal it and to help it, this others, you know, or others can help and heal. And so that's why it's so helpful and so needed for us to have that tongue of the wise that brings healing, right? Shame wants you to see yourself as worthless. And so what did we say was the opposite of that?
Think of what God did for you and what you're worth because of what he did.
Yes, absolutely. So I gave two kind of options of it's the same idea but said in two different ways. Do you guys remember those?
See yourself the way God sees you.
That's it. See yourself the way God sees you. The other one is
change our story.
Yeah, so change our story to be God's story about us. No, another way to say it is learn to see ourselves as God sees us. So one of those might resonate with you more. I need to change my story. In my life, my story's been disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. That's not how God sees this, right? So let me change my story, the story I'm telling about myself. Or I need to change how I see God sees me, right? But basically the same truth there. So what's so helpful with these things is these are not self-help tricks, right? Oh, just try this, like some self-help trick like Heather's mentioning. This is grounded in God, this is grounded in God's truth, and that's why it's powerful, not because it's some, you know, little mental gymnastic you're making, but grounding yourselves in the truth about who God is, what he's told us about himself, what he's told us about reality and his reality, his love for us, all those things. Okay, so this is a song that I think for the sake of time, I'm not going to play it, but Heather brought this song to my attention this week. I listened through it. I will change your name. You shall no longer be called wounded, outcast, lonely, or afraid. I will change your name. Your new name shall be confidence, joyfulness, overcoming one, faithfulness, friend of God, one who seeks my face. Why does this connect with what we've been talking about?
Changing our story to God's story.
Yep, changing our story to be God's story. You know, you've been an outcast, you've been lonely, you've been afraid, or you could, I'm going to see myself as God sees me, my friend. This idea of I will change you, I'll give you a new name, is that Isaiah 63? Yeah. So that idea of I will change your name to be Beulah, to be married, right? You will not be forsaken, you'll be married. So I think really good thoughts there. You can look up that song. We've said this before this quarter, but you're not defined by what tempts you. You're defined by what you do with your temptations. That's the shame piece of it. So often we feel ashamed because, you know, this is what tempts me or this is what's hard for me. That's not what defines us. What defines us is what we do with those temptations. You're not defined by your past. You're defined by your new status with God in Christ. God is who defines us, not our past. He's making all things new. Great, great concept there, Revelation 21. I am making all things new. So I think that those are helpful things for us. So we're going to focus on anxiety today, try to get through this material as best we can, and then in a week and a half, the time we have left, then to talk about depression. Anxiety is a disorder of anticipation. We've talked about that. Very connected with fear. There's a need to do something. I need to do something or fix something or whatever something because I'm afraid of that. I can't rest. I need to solve this because it's dangerous or bad, right? The anxious brain wants three things. I've mentioned this, the three C's of anxiety. Does anyone remember what we mentioned?
Control,
comfort, and certainty.
Chocolate.
Yes. You know, that's a good point. So certainty, comfort, and ultimately control. So that's what anxiety wants, right? If you have an anxious kid, you can see that, right? They like certainty. You know, mommy, tell me that there's not a monster in the closet, right? I want certainty here. Let's look to make sure there's not a monster in the closet, you know, that kind of thing, right? So that's why our faith in God is so helpful in conquering anxiety. That if people without God can improve their anxiety, how much more should the people of God? That doesn't mean it's easy. That doesn't mean it's not a really long, hard road. But because God is on our side, and because he helps us in these ways, the people of God should be able to make progress and grow in these things. That doesn't mean it's easy, but that's our hope in Christ. Thankfully, anxiety disorders are the mental health disorders that are the most straightforward to treat and have the highest, that's just the highest success rates. So if you could pick one, pick anxiety. Now, you don't usually get to pick one, right? But like, if you know, in line, would you like paranoid schizophrenia or anxiety? Be like, I'll take anxiety, right? Thankfully, it's the most straightforward to treat and have the highest success rate. Now, it tends to go along with depression, and we've talked about that. If the anxiety is an up of energy, discomfort for sure, but an up in energy, then the other side of that would be the down. Anxiety provides all this motivation to do something. Well, then the crash afterwards is ultimately a loss of motivation, right? Letting go, a critical skill in conquering anxiety, is naturally going to set you up for feeling down, right? So this is kind of the piece of it. Say I'm working on anxiety. Say, JD, I'm letting go, and now I just feel depressed. I would say, you're on the right track. You're doing good. Because letting go is naturally going to set you up to feel down. You felt up, so the rebound is going to feel down. It's like resignation, okay? Right, so you are trapped, I don't know, you're trapped in Kroger. That's where we were on Thursday night for that tornado that was nearby, right? So you're trapped in Kroger, and the tornado is coming your way, and you're by all those windows. So you go from being worried to resignation, I'm just going to die, right? You go to resignation. And that is a dramatic example, but that's, do you see how that is an up of fear followed by the sorrow of resignation? That's kind of what goes on in our emotions when we're growing in anxiety. Don't be surprised if you're feeling down, but that's progress because you're letting go. So instead of staying in the up, your body's switching it down. But guess what? That roller coaster levels out over time. The roller coaster gets smaller over time. So it's progress still. We know from life experience that our moods impact our decision-making, right? When you're happy, how does that impact impulse spending?
Increases
it, right? You know, some big news, you're like, man, we need to go celebrate, you know? We're going to go to McDonald's, and we're going to, you know, kids, you can pick anything off the dollar menu, you know? So impulse spending when you're happy. When you're angry, I think we've covered this quarter. When you're angry, you tend to be more willing to take risks, right? I'm angry, I'm going to try to get away with that, you know. And then when you're scared, when you're anxious, you're much less willing to take risks. We all know the difference between feeling angry and feeling scared. But that is one of the like observable metrics is when I'm angry, I do stuff I shouldn't do, but I'm willing to take these kind of risks. When I'm scared, I might be willing. When I'm scared, I might be doing stuff I shouldn't do, but that's because I'm avoiding. I'm avoiding risk. I'm trying to kind of make sure things are covered for my safety, right? Fear makes us very irrational. Politicians know this, right? So, and fear has a special way of impacting our decision making. So, again, some of these things we've covered this quarter, but you've walked the same walking trail 5 days a week for years and years, and one day you get really mad on that walking trail. Are you likely to get just that mad the next week when you go back on that trail? Probably not. Okay, you're on a walking trail that you have done 5 days a week for years, and something makes you very afraid. Okay, now are you likely to feel fear the next time? Yes. Even though you felt safe for years and years. And do you think that will have an impact on your, maybe I won't walk this way anymore? All it takes is once sometimes with that. And so it just takes one time feeling in danger in a certain part of town to want to avoid that part of town forever, right? And it may be a long, long time. You're like, I never go there anymore. Oh yeah, because the thing that happened in the parking lot, you know, whatever. So when anxiety is impacting my life, it's keeping me from doing what I should be doing, right? I'm no longer able to do the things I need to be doing. It's a problem that should be addressed. Remember the three C's? It wants certainty, control, and comfort. And these things are good. Certainty is good. Comfort is good. Control is a good thing on some level. But they can become idols, right? That I want to control things. And so I'm not going to trust God. I'm going to take matters into my own hand. Well, then we've made it an idol. It's like Saul who couldn't wait for Samuel. He wanted certainty. He wanted control. And so those are fine, good things. We just mustn't act on them when God's wanted us to trust in him and to make sure that God's the one ultimately in control. Even when we're anxious about spiritual things, you need to make sure that certainty and control are not becoming idols to us. Well, you say, well, this isn't an idol because my worries are about the Bible, or my worries are about my church, or my salvation, or my baptism, or anything. So this is not an idol. I'm very spiritually minded. You're still looking for control in a way. God's not going to come down and tell you you're saved. We have to learn to walk by faith. So those kinds of things, right? And so even when it's about spiritual things, we need to make sure that my desire for certainty, comfort, and control are not becoming idols. In Matthew 6, Mark 5, what is it that Jesus over and over again contrasts with fear? Do not fear, only believe or trust, right? So what's one of the most important tools for growing in anxiety, growing in fear, is growing in faith and trust. I'm giving up that desire for control, and I'm going to give God control. I know it's a trite expression now, but that idea of like Jesus take the wheel. God, I've been trying to control my life. I need you to control it now. And so learning to grow in that. That has not happened overnight. That is very difficult. It takes time to grow in our relationship with God with that. But that is the right direction to go. Don't fear. Learn to trust, right? And when we put it that way, that puts us right back to where we started the quarter with this biopsychosocial spiritual model. Is I'm growing in my relationship with God. When I'm feeling anxious, look to the relationship side of my life. What relationships could be better to help me be less fearful, right? What are the human relationships that can help? And then what about my relationship with God? How can my relationship with God improve to help me be less fearful, more trusting, more resting in God? And so that's what we're wanting to work towards, is to more surrender, more trust. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus. Just to take him at his word. I've proven him over and over again. Oh, for grace to learn to trust him more and to learn to find that rest in Jesus. So that's really the direction to try to go with that. Okay, it says here, I came across a book last week. I didn't change it. That was from last quarter. So now it's been a quarter and a week. So 3 months and a week. I came across a book by a Christian counselor about Bible principles to help with anxiety. And I'd never seen the book before. It was at the bookstore over there that has a Christian book section in Brown County. Oh, a book on anxiety. I'm teaching this. So I picked it up, was able to browse through most of the book there. The book said a lot of really good things and a lot of good passages in it. But my biggest complaint about the book, a Bible counselor writing about anxiety with lots of good Bible verses, my biggest complaint is that the majority of it is about teaching ideas, biblical truths, saying good things, but not focused enough on our actions. And that, I think, is where so much biblical counseling falls short, is it thinks that if I can just speak the right truths to you, that's just going to solve your problems. And what really we need to do is we make changes in our actions and our choices, our behaviors. And then that's what really helps us, is when I start making different choices. If it was just a matter of information, then no Christian would ever struggle with these things, right? Well, I know that Bible verse. So I just think that counseling needs to focus more on actions. You could put it this way. On a cognitive behavioral spectrum, I just lean so much more on the behavioral side, because it's the doing that helps improve our thinking. So this becomes a problematic approach. That is, if it's just about ideas, if it's just about Bible truths. That's problematic when you're struggling with anxiety and you're not thinking well. If someone's not thinking well, well, here's some things to think about, but I'm not thinking well, right? So if you're not thinking well, for those ideas to sink in. So here's our principle from a couple months ago. We improve our thinking when we improve our behaviors and really think about making different choices to improve our anxiety, improve our depression, etc. So one of the best ways to change how we think is to change what we do, especially when our thinker isn't doing so great, right? By handling our fears differently, we literally start to be more rational about the things that give us anxiety. So I start making different choices. That clears the fog better than just me telling you, well, that's irrational. Well, that's irrational. That's not going to be helpful, right? So back to the purple color when we were on that part of the corridor. The think-do-feel model is pretty good, but a more nuanced approach is the A-B model, where awareness leads to better behaviors, which leads to better awareness, which leads to better behaviors. So, hey, when I'm doing that because I'm anxious. I'm not going to do that anymore. So I'm going to make a different choice, and guess what? When I make that different choice, that comes back and improves awareness. And then I make even a better choice, and I keep making better behaviors, which come back and improve my awareness, etc., right? We do our best to increase awareness of what's going on. I notice my pitfalls, my tendencies, my patterns, right? I notice those things. Then I change my behaviors, and then that comes back and improves my thinking, improves my awareness. So remember, AB is not just two random letters. It's not just the first two letters of the alphabet. A stands for awareness, B stands for behaviors, and how did they each improve the other? So that helps me to keep improving, keep improving. We'll think differently when we act differently. So our goal is to create this upward spiral of growing awareness for improved behaviors, which circle back and improve our awareness and thinking. So, you know, kind of going back and forth, but in a better and bigger way over time, right? So that's kind of the idea. Here's three potential paths. And this is one of my favorite charts to show people that I talk to about anxiety. There's three potential paths for dealing with anxiety. One is the actively dropping it, really letting go. That's going to give your brain clarity. The better you can drop, the longer you can drop it, the better clarity you're going to have when you need to pick it up again. It could be you need to drop it for an hour, probably more like a day or two, ultimately for weeks at a time. But I'm going to really let go of this. I'm going to choose faith over fear, drop it again. It keeps coming back to my mind. That's okay. But just keep working on dropping on it. So actively dropping it is like the left path. The right path is not dropping it. I'm not going to think about that. This is, now I am going to think about it, but I'm going to think about it in a productive way. I'm going to journal about it. I'm going to talk to somebody about it. I'm going to pray about it. Doing active, specific things. I'm going to take 20 minutes and look into that a little bit more, whatever it is. Productive choices, certainly exposure would be in that category. So if dropping it completely, I'm not going to work on this. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to be hung up on this. If that's the left path, which is good, and the right path is doing productive things, what do we think the middle path is?
Combination.
Think the middle path is what you don't want to be doing, but yet we tend to do all the time.
Nothing,
but we think we're doing something. And why do we think we're doing something? I'm worrying or
fretting, ruminating,
very good.
That's
so
not a path.
It's the path that most of us take all the time. So I call this the unproductive, mushy middle road. It feels productive, but it's not. It's not dropping it. It's not actively problem solving. This includes ruminating. It includes problem solving, right? Replaying. I come home, you know, after that get-together, and I replay that. Maybe this next time when I replay it, it won't have happened. No, it still happened, you know, that kind of thing. Checking behaviors, internal checking, worrying, anxious habits, seeing how I feel, trying to remember what happened, remember what I was thinking. You may just say, I'm figuring things out. So that's the middle road. Well, guess what? The left road and the right road are both very good, but we don't want to take the middle road. That's the road that we tend to take. So the middle road is what our flesh, my brain, my anxiety, my stress response, that's what it pushes me back towards every single time, all day, every day, right? Too many people, unfortunately, just live their whole life in the mushy middle road, and they don't actively drop it, and they don't productively do anything about it. They just kind of stay in the middle. So the fact of the matter is, we need to stay. These went out again. We need to stay 99% of the time actively dropping it. I mean, maybe you want to say it's 95%, but we want to be actively dropping it most of the day. I don't need to worry about that. I'll worry about that later. I'll work on that later. And then 1% in the productive choices. I'm going to call somebody and talk about that. I'm going to journal about that. I'm going to pray about that. I'm going to look up, you know, some Bible verses, as long as that's not in a reassurance-seeking kind of way. But, okay, productive things. 99% of the time dropping it, 1% of the time doing productive choices. And if you were to do that, you will tackle anxiety and would see profound results, you know, with that. So that's the idea of what's really going to help us. Most of the time dropping it, you think, well, but I need to work, I need to figure out. Sure, so write it down, write the whole thing down, and put on your calendar, I'm going to work on this tonight, I'm going to work on this tomorrow. You can come back to it later, but you'll think better about it if you drop it for 24 hours and then come back to it later. Your mind will have more clarity because you dropped it. And if that's going to give you wisdom, well, then we got to do that. You know, if you can push a big red button on your desk that gave you clarity of thinking, wouldn't we push it? We would, right? So that's what dropping it and coming back to it later accomplishes for us. So this is huge. Any thoughts on kind of this principle, the three paths? Have I converted you a little bit from where you thought it was going?
Well, that's where I thought it was going. You know, do something of both.
Yes, exactly.
You can't just totally ignore it. You got to at least address it at some point.
Yes, absolutely, sure. So it kind of depends on what it is. You may come to a point with something and you say, well, I don't need to ever address that again. But even that, you've come to that point because you have sufficiently addressed it. And you say, yep, I can keep moving forward with that. Was there a hand or Debbie?
I see what you're saying, but I have anxiety problems sometimes. So my big thing is Philippians 4.
Great.
But it's more on the productive, pray and supplication.
Yes.
Be thankful.
Yes.
And let God give you peace.
Yes. Absolutely. And then after you pray about that, then there comes a point where you go, okay, I prayed about that. Now I need to move forward to the next thing. So absolutely. So 1% would be what I would maybe tell someone who has maybe a specific OCD thing. You know, once a day for 20 minutes, we're going to tackle this. If it's a thing that's on your heart and on your mind with prayer, you can pray about it multiple times a day. I'm not trying to limit prayer. But I do want to make sure that we're praying in faith. And I've prayed about that. And I can drop it for a while. God's on the job. Like, God's working on this. And so if I want to pray about it again before bed, great. But then after I do that, say, like the psalmists do, God has heard my prayer. God is my help, you know. So absolutely, this is not to minimize prayer. It's actually to make prayer in faith. Good. Yes, Miriam.
It's helped me a lot, too. Ask God, what are you trying to teach me through all of this? That way I'm not concentrating on what's been done or how I've been hurt or how I should handle this with this person. It's more of, you know, this is really painful, and I keep going back and forth on it and can't find the avenue in on how to make things right. So what do you want me to learn from this?
Yeah.
And the answer is pretty clear after a while.
Yeah.
He wants me to step back and let him do his work.
Yeah. Yeah, and if I see myself being preoccupied with some of those things, that's where I go, okay, you know what? I've prayed about this enough. I'm going to wrap this up for now. I can come back to it tonight before bed. I can come back to it tomorrow. And surprise, we're probably thinking better about it once we kind of come back to it later. Yeah, Heather?
When you first brought up the AB model, I was like, well, if we're already having a problem with our thinking, how aware am I? To me, those seem very connected. But I was wondering if part of that awareness comes from, like, change my scenery. Like, why don't I go take a walk and maybe that clears my head a little, or set this aside so that I can get some rest so that it, because I find that when I'm not thinking well, then I'm not aware enough to go, oh, what are my triggers at this moment? Like, I'm on high alert. Like,
right.
I either have to have somebody else go give me that awareness, or it's gonna take a change of scenery or some time or watch a funny movie or I don't know, something's gotta break it a little to even
sure.
bring the awareness in. So is there like a pre-A step or do you just put that with A?
Well, it just matters what we are calling awareness. You at least say, wait a second, I need to go for a walk. I don't need to tackle this anymore. Or I don't need to continue this conversation. Like, this is unproductive. So let me get a change of scenery. Because even that's a level of awareness, as opposed to, no, we can't let this go yet, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that other people can help us identify the patterns. Hey, you keep making bad choices when you're with those friends. No, is it really? Okay, yeah, it is. You know, and so maybe even other people can help you see what the patterns are, what your tendencies are, and then as you make those changes, you're like, oh, that solved everything. Or no, okay, actually, it's showing up here again. But in that process of trying to figure things out, what's the real root of this? I'm just an angry person. Wait, no, I've come to learn I'm actually a pretty scared person. You know. So that whole kind of growth of the wise man pulling out that water from the well, all of that becomes part of this awareness package to keep changing my behaviors with them. Yeah, Dave?
In a lot of my personal prayers, I start asking, when I start talking to God, I say things about Him that I know for a fact. I know His promises. I know who He is. I know He is ultimately wise and knows everything. All the situations, every one of them, He knows the outcomes of them. He knows all about that. So I start by saying that to Him. And then I say, my questions may not be adequate. My requests may not be adequate. And I know that. But I ask Him to take care of the part that I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's good. That's one way of kind of giving control. Well, I've got to find the perfect thing to pray about. I've got to say this perfectly. No, the Holy Spirit's interceding, you know. So I'll do my best to pray, and then God's going to have to do the rest, and being at peace with that. Yeah. Sure. Okay, so anxiety wants to avoid, shrink back. To grow out of it, we need to confront the fear, to learn to stand our ground, even if it's just in our heart. I like mentioned the Acts 20 and Hebrews 10, both use this expression, shrink back. One more piece of evidence that maybe Paul wrote the book of Hebrews like Sunday, but that's a whole nother thing. Okay, so shrink back, right? So there's different methods of addressing your fears head on. Let me just mention what I think are kind of the three different tiers of that. Passive exposure is when you're not actively seeking the thing, but you're also not running from your thoughts. So that is skill training. I'm just gonna sit here, I'm just gonna breathe, and when thoughts come, I'm not gonna run from them. I'm not gonna sit in front of the thing that scares me, but I do need to learn to sit in a chair and just let thoughts come. So you learn some good skills.
5-minute warning.
With passive exposure, because you're learning to I'm gonna stand my ground when these thoughts come. ERP is like in your face. That is exposure with response prevention. This is the kind of head-on kind of thing. It's the most aggressive, has the quickest results, but it's so painful. I mean, it's awful. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, so it is just very, very difficult. But with some wisdom and best practices, you'll see results very quickly with that. So scaffolding is kind of the middle ground of that, and that's building up little by little, and that's increasing your engagement as your brain is calming down. So I'm going to give an example of that. These are not mutually exclusive. All three probably should be utilized one way or another. Okay, here's an easy example of scaffolding. Your best friend in New York City witnesses something violent on the subway, and now he is terrified of using the subway system in any way. Okay, what would a scaffolding approach look like to conquer the fear? So step one in scaffolding is establish the baseline. What can you do? What can you do, right? How close can you get? What can you do to address it? So you establish the baseline. That's the starting place. What's the starting place you can build at? And it kind of doesn't matter where it is. That's just where you're at. It's not a big deal. It's like, okay, what is the starting place? So could you stand on the steps that go underground? Could you stand on the steps for 5 minutes? Could you stand on the steps for 3 minutes or 10 minutes? Say, no, that's too hard, right? could you sit at the park bench looking at the subway entrance for 5 minutes, for 3 minutes? What's the kind of baseline here of where you're at? Could you sit in your home and draw pictures of the subway? You know, you may need to get fairly removed, but yeah, I could do that. Okay, so that's your baseline, okay? It really doesn't matter where the baseline is, that's just where you are with the fear. And then step two, naturally, is you move on top of the baseline. You build little by little, scaffolding up. So slowly do more and more. 3 minutes more the next week, 5 minutes more the next week. You go from the park bench to the steps, right? You go from the steps to underground. And you are scaffolding that in a way that you out incorporate some of the passive skills that hopefully you've already worked on, but that idea, you're building from that. Consistency is key, commitment is key. Do the exposure 6 days a week. 5 days a week is fine, but you get the idea. Someone is afraid, say a social anxiety situation. Say it's their once a week co-op or their once a week college class or something. And they're like, well, I'm going, but I'm not calming down. Well, if you're only doing it once a week, then that may not be regular enough. You may need to do it 5 days a week to really be building on that. So, you know, that's why more is going to be better there. It's only going to work with people who are committed to the growth, and that's why it really works well if you have kids that you can tell what to do versus adults you can't tell what to do, right? And then you're like, well, that's it. You're starting at the baseline and you're building on it. What's there more to do? Well, supplement, reward richly, rejoice together, celebrate those victories, right? Maybe you get a coupon twice a month to get a free pass, no questions asked. Maybe you have a daily reward at the beginning. If it's highly anxious, I would reward yourself immediately afterwards. No reason not to. You may get to know the people at Dairy Queen very well. You know, I have a story about that. But so that's the idea, is establish the baseline, consistently then bump that up at the rate that is doable, and then reward along the way, supplement maybe with, for, you know, no questions asked, you can get out of it today, but that kind of thing. So that's a scaffolding approach. And the fact of the matter is these things just work. If anything, this doesn't work if it could be that it's not working because of the prep work of building the skills of passive exposure, but also we may just need to do scarier things to help us get over get over the hump of that's keeping us. One of the high school kids I talked to, she now has it in her daily homeschool schedule to do journaling, like prayer journaling and journaling about her OCD. And she's been doing prompts from her parents. They're good prompts. Gratitude things, you know, what's going on this week, emotions of the day, whatever. I was like, okay, that's good. But now I want it to get scary. And so I was like, well, now we need to actually bump it up to where you're directly addressing the things that are your fear. So finding growth through that exposure. Even better than just tolerating the fear, it's best to lean into it. We learn to lean into it. Really show it who's boss. I'm going to sit here on these subway steps, and I'm going to do this, right? Really show who the boss is. Instead of letting anxiety push you out of your body, lean in and feel grounded in your body, right? Don't let it do that
end of class
pulling you into your head thing, right? It's pretty obvious that this exposure approach is the opposite of the world's current obsession, where the world says avoid the thing that brings you anxiety, right? Run away from that, minimize all those things. But sadly, when we avoid the things we fear, it only reinforces it, it only strengthens the fear. Lynn Lyons has a lot of good things to say, and we'll start to talk about that later. So we'll pick up there, God willing, in a week and a half for our last class. Thank you all so much.